Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast. How's it going, everybody? Today is Wednesday, October 15th, 2025. And the podcast just celebrated its 2-year anniversary. So thank you, everybody. I mentioned it last week, but I want to say it again. Thank you so much to all the people who are listening, sharing, obviously subscribing and rating, reviewing. Thank you to our wonderful Patreon audience. You guys rock, and I owe you guys big time. I got to pull some stuff out of my ass. It's been a week, man. It's been a year. I think we're all trying to find a way to navigate all the wildness that's happened over the course of the year. And one of the things I've found is I have to remind myself to give myself a little grace. So I hope you guys will give me a little as well. I'm trying to get, like, basically head out of ass and sponsors on cast. So here's the thing. I have ideas and stuff, and then I get overwhelmed with other shit in life. And then all of it falls apart. So hooray, you know? That is one of the things I hear a lot of people say. Like, if you're one of those kids in the gifted program, you're now sitting around with dozens of unfinished hobbies and a career path that never quite panned out. And I'm like, yo, I didn't think we were taking shots at each other in 2025, but I guess that's what we're doing this year. Anyway, thank you guys anyway. Like I said, rambling a little bit, but thank you so much for listening to the podcast. Thank you for sharing, especially those people who are going to rate and review it. I'd love to see some of that if you're out there. And please share it with people. Like, telling you, it makes a huge difference. I say it all the time. I don't think people really get it. But it really does actually change the way that people receive the podcast, and also opens up opportunities for me to do cooler stuff with the podcast for you. I think one thing people kind of tend to take for granted is, you know, because it's not like you paid to do this, right? You didn't sign up for this podcast because of a subscription service. It's not part of like your Netflix or Spotify, maybe. I mean, maybe it is Spotify, but I mean, if that's the case, it's free through Spotify. I think sometimes people think that something that's freely given has no value. And nothing can be further from the truth. Anything that you get is not free. Some effort, some cost, some expenditure went into it. So it is very much appreciated when you take that and then turn it around and send it to somebody else and be like, hey, you'll appreciate this too. Definitely, it definitely helps. And it's a huge morale boost. You know, when things are getting, you know, kind of slow and stagnant, you know, seeing a couple of numbers tick up can sometimes be like, hey, man, you know, it's reaching people. People like it enough to share it with their friends or family. So that does help. I just want you to know that when it does go up, I appreciate it and I see it. I wish I could thank each and every one of you individually, but I don't know that you guys want to do it like that. So before we get into today's podcast, I want to tell you something. We're going to get into the Acidophilus report in just a minute, but I got to tell you, I make hot cocoa. I think part of it is like this time of year, historically speaking for me anyway, from the places I used to live, was when the weather starts to turn, it starts to get cooler. You know, the days get a little shorter, you know, the nights get a little longer, the weather starts to dip, you're wearing a jacket out when you go out at night. Before long, you know it, you're wearing a sweater inside. It's like, this is my favorite time of year. Like, when the weather starts to get colder, it's my favorite thing. And one of my other favorite things, too, is to make hot chocolate. And because of my tummy troubles,
because I got a sensitivity of chummy,
the thing that really crushed me was I couldn't drink like hot cocoa with milk. So I have to either get oat milk or soy milk, which, ugh, just to be honest with you, I can't stand the taste of soy milk. Oat milk is a little better, but it's so starchy, it's heavy. It's almost like drinking half and half. So I've been trying to find ways to like switch it up. And there was a while I was drinking this milk brand called Rebel. But even their milk was like still very thick and heavy. So it was tough to drink or tough to consume in foods where you would just have the milk plus thing like cereal or, you know, coffee or something like that. It was like I just felt like I was drinking half and half all the time. Then I stumbled onto Fairlife, I think it is. Because I tried like a Publix brand, Publix is like a local supermarket chain here in the South. Tried the Publix brand stuff, and sometimes it would be good for like, you know, be good for a day or two, and sometimes it would be off. It spoiled real fast. And then I tried another brand from Winn-Dixie called Know and Love, and that was also very hit or miss. Then I started looking at Fairlife, which is a little bit, it's in between those two. It's kind of like, as far as price is concerned, it's middle of the road. But the milk is good. You know, it's solid and it lasts for a good long time. It's not like, you know, it lasts for like 2 months. No, it just lasts for like, you know, normal amount of days, like 7 to 8 days, so about a week once you open it. But it's been really good. And I haven't done it yet, but I've been thinking about making some hot chocolate with that. But in the meantime, I've been making like some stuff with like, you know, just like a powdered hot chocolate with water and, you know, like a little bit of chocolate syrup and some of my coffee creamer that I usually use for like teas, like when I make my chai. So I started adding that. And then, you know, what I forgot was I used to get this stuff when I was a kid. My grandmother, you know, rest in peace, on my father's side, used to make this like Mexican style hot chocolate. And one of the things that was cool about it was it had this like very rich, I mean, rich chocolatey taste, but it had like a kind of extra little zip to it. And turns out part of that zip is just adding a little bit of nutmeg and cinnamon. And so I started adding like just like an eighth of a teaspoon or so of like nutmeg and an eighth of a teaspoon of cinnamon to my hot chocolate. Brother, let me tell you, it is a special little treat. It is delicious. I know it sounds weird at first, but it really isn't. Once you give it a try, you'll be like, okay, it may not be your favorite thing ever, but you'll be like, all right, I can see how this would be enjoyable, because it truly is. I'm sipping a little bit of it right now. Also, when it's really fresh, it's fresh and hot, and especially if you make it like with milk on a stove, like my grandmother used to make it. She would heat up milk on a stove and then add this like little block of abuelita chocolate. It's like this crumbly like Mexican chocolate that had like the coat, like the cinnamon infused into it. And she would put that in there and it melted all together. And you could smell it throughout the whole house. I just have it in a mug right now, the covered mug. And oh man, it just smells so good. Like the chocolate and the cinnamon together. Oh. Mm. Yeah, you have to listen to that. But oh, so delicious. Just brings back memories of being a little kid again. And I'm telling you, it's a win. It's a definite win. If you haven't tried it, give it a shot. I'm telling you, once you get a chance, I think once you give it a chance, you might find that it ends up being like one of your great, you know, additions to your holiday drink routines. And yeah, let me know. Do you like it? One, if you get a chance to try it. And then two, like, you know, hit me up over on Patreon. Like I said, free to follow the Patreon so you can just send me messages and stuff. That'd be awesome. What is your favorite holiday drink? We're coming up to the holidays pretty soon. So I'm curious to hear what your holiday drink favorites, specials, recipes, if you got them. Maybe I could try making some of the recipes and taste them on the podcast. That'd be awesome. But yeah, let me know what your favorite holiday recipe is. And do you think my suggestion for adding like some cinnamon and nutmeg to your hot chocolate is a good one? Have you ever tried it? Do you like it if you did? Yeah. So let me know. Oh yeah, the Acidophilus report. I need to get like a stinger for this. Coming into the end of week two. The Acidophilus report seemed to be going really well. This experiment has been working out okay. Except for something went wrong Monday night. Monday night, I went to go and I was going to make a salad for myself for dinner. And we ran out of, you know, spinach. Or the spinach we had, like, you know, wilted and turned that, you know, gray, green, mushy kind of shit. So I was like, ah, damn it. So I run up to Winn-Dixie. I'm like getting there just before they close. The Bears game is about to start, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. And I run in there. I grab some, you know, some gluten-free spinach wraps and grab spinach itself. I already had most of the other salad stuff at home, like, you know, tomatoes. I had ham slice, like sliced ham. So I could, you know, cut that up into little slivers and put that in there. Some cheese. I grabbed a thing of feta, which I'm worried that maybe it was either the feta, the ham, or the spinach that could have set me off. But I came back and I made these wraps. They were delicious. The feta was like, I think maybe it's just because it's been a while since I had feta. It had like a, I don't know. It didn't taste off. It just tasted peculiar. I think it's because I had the garlic herb stuff. Normally, I just buy like plain feta. Maybe it was the garlic herb that was kind of throwing me off. But I ate these salad wraps. I felt great. You know, they were so good. I had like three of them, which wasn't a lot when you think about it. Because when you roll it up, it's maybe about the size of a microwave burrito. So it's kind of small. But I munched through, and it's mostly vegetables because it was like, you know, I had like a salad topper. So it was like, you know, cashews and sunflower seeds and dried cranberries and, you know, you have lettuce. You've got tomato. I didn't cut up any onion, which I need to go and get another one of those. But anyway, all that, and it was just like, you know, meat, cheese, and like a little bit of like plant-based ranch dressing. Rolled them up, cut them in half, munching them down. I felt great. Stomach felt great. And then right around like 11:30, 12 o'clock, just the... I'm like, oh my God, what is happening right now? I was so mad. Because like the night before, I had made this stuff with like ground beef and these like Chinese mushrooms that I found at this local store. I talked about them last time, and they were really good. I ended up tossing all that stuff because I didn't want to accidentally eat some and then make myself sick again, which is actually what ended up happening yesterday, because I had like a little bit of it and I'm like, this is probably fine. And I didn't realize, oh my God, how long was it since I made that? Then I thought back, I'm like, oh my God, I talked about it on last week's podcast. I'm like, I'm going to kill myself. I'm going to actually delete my subscription to Life because I'm too stupid to put labels on food. So yeah, aggravated my stomach with something in those salad wraps on Monday night, further exacerbated it into Tuesday. And then I wake up today and I'm like, I think we're gonna make it, but I'm so tired. I'm so tired. Cause then I have this wildly vacillating sleep schedule where I'll be up until like 7 o'clock in the morning some days. And then I'll sleep until noon or one. You know, after being up for like, you know, 24 hours or so. And then I'll get up and go back out, do the things and whatnot. And then I'm up again till like 3 or 4 in the morning, go and lay back down, sleep for like 4 or 5 hours, and then get back up and then go and do it again. Then I have a normal night of sleep where I'm like, all right, I'll go to bed like around like, you know, 11, midnight, something like that. And then I'll sleep for like, you know, 5, 6 hours if I'm lucky. Maybe I'll sleep for like 3, I'll get awakened in the middle of the night, like 3 or 4. Then I go back to sleep until about 8. And then I'm like, all right, let's go do stuff. But I think the biggest thing is that I don't have like a solid enough sleep schedule where I could sleep just a normal number of hours, or even like 5 to 6 uninterrupted hours. Nothing fucking with me, my stomach not screwing with me, nothing waking me up, no alarms going off. Just sleep for like 5, 6 hours straight a night. Every night, so I can actually get rest, because I'm starting to feel like my mind is unraveling. And I know quite a few people who deal with insomnia and whatnot, and I get it, because I've been there before, and now I'm seeing it again. I'm like, can we please stop? I just want to sleep. But yeah, it destruggles, man. But like I said, I thought maybe the acidophilus wasn't doing its job. Then I started thinking about, I'm like, maybe I actually just ended up eating something that was a little off and my stomach reacted really badly to it. But the funky thing about it was I'd be fine right up until like, you know, minutes before I feel like I needed to go to the restroom. And then my stomach would start growling horrifically. And I'm like, oh, that's not good. And then pain. I'm like, no, I'm trying so hard to be good. My stomach hates me. That's all right. I'll hate you right back, stomach. I will hate you right back. I'll make you do better. But I mean, week 2, not great. Like, for the most part, it was the supplement seems to be working really well. But I just need to figure out what the fuck, man. And it seems like sometimes I get something that seems like it's good. And then after I've cooked it, it's like, man, why is this so terrible? Why my stomach hurts so bad? I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it. I'm trying to learn. Oh, remember I told you guys a while back I was watching this show called Butterfly on Amazon Prime? And it stars Daniel Day-Kim. And he's like, he plays like a counterintelligence agent slash former retired assassin who goes back to protect his family against the agency that he helped create. And I was watching it, you know, I was supposed to watch it sooner. My buddy Derek, or my movie watching pal, we were supposed to actually like watch it and talk about it. And I just kind of, I don't know, I just fell off of it and put it off and put it off and put it off. I finally finished it this past week. And I gotta say, I mean, it's probably like a solid 6.5 to 7 out of 10. And there, I'll give you some reasons without spoiling this, by the way. I just gave you like the broad strokes of the story. There's another young lady who's in the series, and she plays Daniel Day Kim's daughter in the show. Her name is Rebecca in the show, but the actress's name is Raina Hardesty. And Daniel Day-Kim does a really good job, I think, just kind of like pulling off this character who's got like just the right amount of seriousness, but also like a paternal side to him. And there's obviously like, you know, the care and consideration for, you know, like just like the daughter, but also like not just as a daughter, but also as a person, you know? I think sometimes, you know, a character is written to be almost like a cartoon version of a parent. But it seemed like in the show, he wanted to be actually like, maybe I couldn't raise you the way I wanted to as a daughter, but I'm trying to help you at least be a good person. I don't know if that makes sense, but if you watch it, you'll kind of get it. But Raina Hardesty is a very tough sell, mainly because her character is not very likable. And I find this a lot, I think, lately when... especially like when female characters are introduced into stuff. And I don't know who's writing these characters. Like, which one's actually responsible for writing this particular character's arc or attitude or, you know, following their plot through the story or whatever. Like, their plot line through the story. But a lot of times I've noticed that, like, a lot of female characters are very, very poorly written. And it's unfortunate because they have such great ideas behind them. And I don't think she acted the scenes poorly, but I think they did it in such a way that she didn't feel realistic. She felt very unlikable. And I go back and look at, I think the series was, I think, predicated on a young adult book. And not to say there's anything necessarily wrong with young adult fiction, but it's not really the most elevated writing, for being quite honest. And I think there's also a graphic novel that was produced about this same franchise, but it's not horrible. It's just not stellar. And the other thing I have a big problem too, when it comes to like, this is kind of like more of an action. Now you could tell it's like, you know, we're talking about assassins and deep government conspiracies and, you know, rogue agents. So there's going to be like some hand-to-hand fighting, some gunplay and stuff like that. I felt like a lot of the action scenes were really choppy. It's a big complaint of mine when it comes to action. I feel like some of the scenes were really choppy and like cut together kind of haphazardly. That's not to say that the action that was there wasn't good. It just wasn't as fulfilling as I would have hoped it would have been. And I also recognize as well that not all of the people who are in these shows are martial artists or fighters in any stretch. But you would think that like with some kind of backing behind them, like they could get like a good stunt choreographer or like a action cinematographer to shoot those scenes. And it just felt like sometimes it just wasn't really there. Overall, the story is like, you know, it's interesting. It does kind of seem a little rushed. And I think that was because they, like almost every like mini series that you try to produce for any streamer, streaming service, whether it's Amazon, Hulu, Netflix, whatever, you're always like seriously being held at gunpoint because they're like, if people don't lose their minds over the first two episodes of this series, it's curtains for you. And unfortunately, that's what happened with Butterfly. It was canceled before it could even get close to a season two. I think it was actually canceled like as they were starting to release episodes. So it was like, ouch. But I kind of get it, and I kind of feel bad. Because I think there's a lot of fun stuff that could be done with the show and the property, but I just think there wasn't enough polish put on it up front for anybody to say, like, I'll continue to invest in this, which is unfortunate. Like I said, I think they did a pretty good job. And with a little bit more time and a little bit more care, and not even that much more budget, I think they could have done a really stellar job with it, but it just seemed like it was all right. It wasn't bad, it was just hype. There's nothing wrong with that. But I did say too, oh goodness, excuse me. I told you guys I'm tired. We got to talk about the gridiron gripes, baby. Gridiron gripes. So last week, my prediction was that all of the teams that I was pulling for would win this week. The Steelers, the Jaguars, and of course, the Chicago Bears. Turns out 2 out of 3 ain't bad. I didn't get to catch the Steelers-Browns game because by the time it was actually popping off really good. The Jaguars game had like, was it Jaguars? Or was it the Bears? I think it was the Jaguars that day. Yeah. And the Jaguars game was pretty much on its way out. And so I didn't get to catch that game. But I got to see the aftermath. The Steelers beat up on the Browns 23-9. Not a mean feat to beat the Cleveland Browns this season. I mean, it's not really anything to brag about, but I mean, at least they did it, you know. Meanwhile, the Jacksonville Jaguars took on the Seattle Seahawks, and now they're standing both at 4-2 because Jacksonville went down. The biggest thing for Jacksonville is the thing I've been talking about all season long, is they take so many penalties that it takes them out of the game. Just penalty after penalty after penalty, pushing them further back from the goal line. And after a while, they just can't make it back up, you know? Like that whole 2 steps forward and 3 steps back kind of thing is what was really kicking their ass. And also, near the end of the game, they just got outmaneuvered by the Seahawks. Like, the Seahawks had them over a barrel. They knew that there was no reason for them to try to give Jacksonville any running room to try to make up the 8-point deficit that they lost by. And they're like, all these dudes need to do is score a touchdown and get a 2-point conversion. This game's going into overtime. And the Seahawks look kind of gassed out. Like, they had given Jacksonville a good hard way to go of it through the middle of the game. At the end of the second half, end of the second quarter, I mean, going into the third quarter, they were really punching the Jags up, you know? And it was looking pretty bad. And then it didn't get much better looking. But they just got outwitted. Jacksonville just got outsmarted that time. And like I said, I'm not giving them an excuse. The penalties were still on the board. That was definitely them. They didn't maximize on like a couple of opportunities. But like overall, I think the penalties were eating them up so much that, you know, if you had to keep running that same stretch of field 3-4 times over, you're going to get worn out. So yeah, I think they just got outmaneuvered and like over-penalized. But that was the penalties were on them. But even still, coming away with the 8-point loss to the Seahawks, Seahawks 20, Jaguars 12, not the worst showing I've seen from the Jacksonville Jaguars, particularly not this year, but just in years. That was actually pretty solid. To be 4-2 at this part of the season is a unique, I think, position for Jacksonville to some extent. Because they generally tend to get beat up all season long, and then they do great like 3 weeks before playoff contention becomes an issue, and then they just shit the bed again. So, yeah, good to them. Yeah, good on them. I mean, I'm glad that they got close. Ah, man, that chocolate is so good. Hopefully next week we'll see a stronger showing out of our guys, but, you know, hey, any given Sunday, right, anything's possible. And then last, but most certainly not least, we have our very own, you know him, you love him, Chicago Bears. Oh my God, playing the Washington Commanders. This game actually made me mad. So, again, like I think Chicago has always had this, like, this aspiration, it feels like, to be a fourth quarter team. Where, like, they turn it around at the very end. making it this like storybook Cinderella kind of thing, and they just need to stop and just consistently put points on the board and win. They're not built, and they generally aren't built that way because they're very defense heavy and they're not so leaning into the offense. So defensive takeaways are great for Chicago because it usually gives them an opportunity to score. Even if they don't score on the defensive takeaway, they at least usually set the offense up for a pretty easy shot at a score. But you can't do that every week and expect a win. You know, it works like every now and again. Like a trick play or two will work every now and again, but it doesn't work all the time. And the problem was that they were up against the Commanders, who are not slouches and were just giving Chicago the blues. And it really ended up boiling down to a couple of things. One, of course, penalties. Chicago and Jacksonville kind of share that curse of doing something great, having a stupid penalty take the whole thing away. They're waiting for that last quarter push, which they ended up getting this time around, which I think is actually kind of a disservice to them as a team. Like, they need to, if they're going to break this tradition, trend, I don't know what exactly to call it. If they're going to break this, they have to not get bailed out in the fourth quarter. Like, it just can't happen. So they did get a lot of actual penalties. Then they got a couple of bogus ones too, which, by the way, that illegal formation that they pulled to negate the touchdown at the end of the, like, near the end of the fourth quarter, that was the refs being paid off. There's no fucking way. I don't give a damn who you are, how you want to phrase it. There's no way you can tell me that that ref was that concerned about a guy's helmet being an additional 6 inches out of line with everyone else's. That was just dude being petty. That was dude being petty. And he's like, you know what? This looks like a scoring opportunity for them. Let's just go ahead and call this preemptively and just wipe this out. And I think they were also like, they were really pushing to see if they could push Chicago to their very limits with like penalty calls. And they flip it over like, oh, now we're penalizing the other team, so Chicago gets the ball back at this point. Ha ha ha. But it's like, it was never quite balanced. It always felt like they were looking at ways to like stab Chicago for stuff that was like seemingly innocent or was something that was like basically unavoidable. I think they got one call at one point. I'm trying to remember exactly. I think it was roughing the passer. But I'm trying to remember who it was. Gosh, I had this written down. I lost a note about it. But it was one of our defensive linemen was running in. He was going for a sack. But he was actually going for a tackle and sack, and he just got clipped as he was running in, and so he kind of faltered forward, and instead of hitting the QB in the chest or in the bread box, he ended up going down and hitting him in the knees, and they called that roughing the passer. And it's like, dude, if you watch this, he literally gets tripped up and falls forward. It wasn't like he ran at him at that height; he was falling down. And I think that's another thing the refs go like, dude, we're so precious about quarterbacks lately. I'm like, they're players too, right? They should all be able to get it. But they treat quarterbacks like they are inviolate. And it also ruins the game of football because it slows it down. It makes it so everybody's too scared to do anything. I don't know how many times I saw QBs over the last couple of weeks scramble forward out of the pocket past the line of scrimmage and then run up the sideline while other defenders are just basically waving their hands at them like they're trying to scare, a cat into a cat carrier instead of just tackling them. Now, to their credit, Chicago is kind of like, nah, man, screw that. If you run past that line of scrimmage, your ass belongs to me. So a couple of their guys were actually putting them hands on that quarterback, which I was like, that's good to see. And what happened to rap tackles? I remember when I was like just starting to play football when I was in junior high. If we did not get both arms around like a body part or the torso of the person we were trying to tackle, we were doing laps. And now everybody's just, it's not flag football. It's not two-hand touch. You have to actually put these dudes down. They're twice as fast as they were just even 15 years ago. They're twice as strong. You have to put your whole body into tackling somebody. So it's really refreshing to actually watch Chicago go after not only a quarterback, but anybody who had the ball. They're like, if you have the ball, I'm getting you. I was really glad to see that. And then to pull off that 25-24 win right there at the end. That beautiful field goal kick was just chef's kiss. It was an excellent, excellent like fourth quarter showing. Please don't do that ever again, Chicago. I almost had a minor heart attack when I watched that guy line up for that punt because they were talking so much smack about him because of his trade-in, you know what I mean? The way he was traded into the Bears. And I felt kind of bad because I was almost buying into the hype. And they were saying this guy is Jake Moody. So he started this season, I guess, with San Francisco. Then he got cut in the season opener because he missed two field goals. He signed to the Bears practice squad like in week two is what I'm seeing here. But he didn't have a lot of time on the squad. So they were just like, we don't really know if this dude's actually got it. And then he goes on for four or five kicks against the Commanders. And the last one was literally just the winning kick with 3 seconds on the board. And he just, boom, right between the uprights. I was like, oh my God, that is absolutely brilliant. And the look on his face, Jake Moody, like that dude deserves his own little, and he deserves his own little mini parade for that day. The guys all circled around. They picked him up on their shoulders. Like it was like something out of a football movie. They're like, this is our guy. And he's just smiling. He's like, yay. And it's almost like he couldn't fully believe it. And everybody's super excited for him. I was almost in tears. I'm like, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I used to love about football. Those kinds of like, oh my God, I can't believe it moments. So yeah, it was great. It was a great showing by Chicago. And like I said, could have been better, obviously. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. They won. They walked off with that dub. And Jake Moody deserves an ice cream sandwich and a pat on the back if you see him. That guy really like made me a believer. So congratulations to Chicago and congratulations to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And next week, Jacksonville, we're looking to see some good things. So let's make it happen. Matter of fact, coming up this week tomorrow, which is today's Wednesday, so tomorrow, it's Steelers versus Bengals. This one looks like another walk-off for the Steelers. You know, I mean, the Bengals and the Browns are like a very interesting dynamic. Like, you never know what you're going to get, like a box of chocolates, right? But it's the Steelers and it's the Bengals. I got to go Steelers. Also, next week, it's Rams versus Jaguars and Saints versus Bears on Sunday. That's an early game for the Jaguars and an afternoon game for Chicago, which I hope I'll be able to actually catch that one. But let's see. Rams and Jags are tied at 4-2. You know, I'm going to actually... I think that the Jaguars are going to give them the business. I think now that they've had like a... They had like a short week, and that's not really much of an excuse. But they had like a short week last week, and I think that they will come back stronger, a little bit more hungry, a little bit more focused. So I'm going to throw the dub. I'm going to put my money on the Jaguars. Not money, for real. Put money on the... Yeah, we're going to all go... We're going to repeat last week. We're going to say all four of our guys to win. The Steelers, the Jaguars, and the Bears. We're going to go with that. And let's see how that works out for us this week. I don't know. If I had to go back and count up my record, I'm not doing the greatest at predicting these games. Every now and again, I get a good streak, but not always. We're trying to get better, though. We are watching some other football in between the games that I normally watch just for the gridiron gripes. But yeah, we're trying to work on that. Actually, I was thinking about fantasy football the other day. And, I was never big into fantasy football. I also didn't have a lot of friends who really played. As I got older, I met more people who played fantasy football. And it kind of made me laugh because some of those guys are real shitty about like nerdy / geeky gamer stuff. I'm like, dude, you guys are literally just playing a role-playing game, but with like real people. You know what I mean? I create a character with like a rule set and a couple of dice rolls. It's like, you guys are actually basically moving like digital people around because of your draft. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same thing. It's just like a different, it's like a different avenue. It's a different delivery mechanism. But you're doing the same thing I'm doing. So I don't know what your fucking problem is. Yeah, it's kind of weird. There's a lot of stuff like that that I've noticed is weird too. We were talking about this the other day. What is like the, somebody, I'm trying to remember who it was that mentioned it. It was like women end up usually getting caught in those multi-level marketing schemes. And they're like, what is the thing that catches, like, you know, it's like, you know, oh, well, like shit, like Mary Kay or Avon or Tupperware or whatever. Or, you know, just in like cosmetic stuff and, you know, weird, like, you know, weight loss teas, stuff like that. Like, so what's the thing for dudes? I was like, I think the thing for dudes is less about making money and more about being more dudely. So I'm thinking it's those dude bro self-help guys. Like, they're like, if you give me $100 a week for these next couple of weeks, I'll show you how to be an alpha male and how to get all the chicks. I'll show you how to get more money out of your job. And people fall for that shit. I'm just like, oh man, that's so sad. But that's what it is. Like, the dudes are like, I can make money. You know what I mean? I could. Usually it's less about like them making money or trying to find independence. It's more about them trying to like be more of a dude, trying to hook up with more chicks, you know. Confidence and masculinity are the two like weakest spots for a lot of dudes. And I think that dude bro self-help thing is one that really gets a lot of our guys, which is pretty sad. It says a lot about our country. It says a lot about the way we raise men and teach men. But oh my God. Yeah, I think the dude bro thing is a, you know, the Andrew Tates of the world. You know, and even like a Joe Rogan kind of guy. Because like, you know, I used to like Joe Rogan's stand-up, you know, his older stuff especially. And the more I start watching him and he started leaning into Trump and the right-wing stuff, and then he would like back away from it when it got to be too radioactive for him. I was like, you know, there's a weakness there. Like when you were younger and hungrier and fresh on the scene, he like had like this fresh take and this like, you know, more vivacious look. And you felt like he actually was kind of leaning a little bit more, even if he had some like conservative views, which are, you know, that's nothing wrong with that. He's more of like a center, you know, center kind of guy, not left or right, just kind of right there in the middle. Like, I got some conservative views. I got some pretty liberal views. Most of my stuff is just don't treat people badly and, you know, do good stuff to other people. You know what I mean? Like, you know, do good stuff to help the community and help the planet. And I was like, I'm like for that. And there were a couple of people I thought they were on that path. And it's just like, now I'm watching them. They're turning into these, like, you know, chest thumping wannabe alpha males. I'm like, yeah, this just isn't really it, fam. It's not doing it for me. I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. It makes me want to kind of go back to school. Much as I'm like, I know I can't afford this shit right now. It'd be dope to go back to school. Cause I feel like, you know, even like language stuff, editing stuff, going back for like, you know, film and video editing, audio production. Like, I feel like I need to do something else. And it might open up some more avenues for me. You know, I'm not sure. I've been feeling very distracted and lost last couple years, actually. But maybe it is that I just need to go back to a scholastic environment and repurpose myself a little bit more. Who knows? But I mean, if you guys have some thoughts or ideas on like stuff you do to refresh your mind and your spirit when you're feeling stagnant, like I said, hit me up over on Patreon, patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. Yeah, let's talk about that too. Did y'all hear D'Angelo died? D'Angelo passed away this past week too. 51, which is kind of shocking. I didn't realize that we were that close in age. 51 that's a rough way to go, man. It's not that any death is easy or more cool or whatever. I don't know. Maybe there's a cool death out there. But I mean, it's not like anybody's like, oh, you know, it was really awesome that so-and-so died. You know, like they did it. They did a great job. Like, no, I think it's just sad. I also didn't, you know, you don't really think about D'Angelo very often unless you're listening to like a lot of R&B music. But yeah, it's just weird. I found out he died. I was like, that's crazy. Like, they're taking all the good ones right now. And even the ones that aren't really making a lot of waves or making a lot of noise, there's like, come on, I'll pick this one. Yoinked up off the planet, man. Just gone. Just gone. Yeah, random start. That was really dark. Oh, I have another theory. I've been trying to put this into effect in my own home. I've been basically doing this for myself for years. Like, since I was, like, maybe in, like, high school. All the way up until today. But I need you to... I'm going to try to give you a doctrine for domestic living. Right? I want you guys to see if you can drill in on this. 10 feet or 10 steps. Right? The average step probably covers about 2.5 feet, depending on your height or whatever. So basically, like 10 steps or 10 feet. Anything that you need for any area of the house that you're in should be within 10 steps or 10 feet of wherever you need it. So let's put it this way. For example, if you are in my house, my guest bathroom is near the front of the house, obviously, and it's in between like the two bedrooms, which is my office and the guest bedroom, and there's a linen closet that's right outside in this little atrium that kind of connects all three of these rooms. If you run out of toilet paper in that bathroom, generally speaking, there are three places that it's in right there in that bathroom. There's a caddy right in front of you, there's a cabinet right next to you, and there's a shelf right above you where you're sitting on the toilet. If it's not in one of those three places, it's almost assuredly in the guest, like the linen closet or the guest bedroom, which is rare, but occasionally if we have overflow, we'll put it in there. So like, yeah, nothing is going to be more than 10 feet or, you know, 10 feet or 10 steps away from where you're going to need it. If you need a trash bag, for example, you know, or almost always I fold up like a couple of plastic bags and put them in the bottom of a can. Like, you know, like a small can like you'd have for like an office waste basket. But for like the trash can, like the big one, that's right there in the pantry next to the trash can. There might be the only exception is that I don't have an extra box on the back porch, which, I mean, I only change that thing out once, like maybe once a month because we don't use it that often. Or the one in the garage, but even the garage is still 10 steps away from the pantry. So you could get to it within 10 steps and find the trash bags. So just a kind of cool thing I thought of the other day, because I've always kind of carried it, but I've never really mentioned it before. But like, if you're looking for something, that's like, you can find it within 10 steps or 10 feet. And the other thing is you got to actually look for shit. I know some people are like, oh, we don't have this. I'm like, it's right there. This is a thing that I actually noticed. This is a thing that happened. I was like, oh, crap. Keep applesauce around because, one, it's a good, easy snack when you're not really sure what you want to eat, but you just don't need to let yourself go hungry for a long time. And then, two, especially if you have upset stomach, like I do sometimes, applesauce is a nice way to kind of give yourself a little something you can eat. It's not going to be too heavy. It's not going to be too acidic or too basic. It just kind of gives you a nice little baseline, right? So we had a jar of applesauce that was open in the refrigerator, but because things got shuffled around in there, didn't move things to look, another jar got open. So now we have two jars of applesauce that are simultaneously on the clock right now. And it's like, ah, shit. You know, in an economy where things are so tight that even something as dumb as applesauce can cost like $8 for a jar, those are little things that you can do for yourself. Just look. Apply yourself. Before you do something, check. You know what I mean? Ask somebody. You know? It'd be like, opening a jug of milk. You know, when you have another one like right in front of it. Like, I'm going to get the one behind it. Use the one that's right up front. Kind of shit. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta look at that kind of stuff. And it's like, I'm always trying to keep mindful about it, mainly because I'm worried that I'm going to eat something that's gone bad. Like, I did that one time with the mayonnaise, which made me so sick and made me so upset with myself because I didn't check. But I try to be mindful about that kind of stuff because you never know when it could end up being like, hey, I opened this before I opened that, and then somebody eats the one that's not up to date, and then they get sick, and then there's a whole fucking mess. Yeah, see, that shit's rough. But then again, like I said, it's just the way things cost so much now. It's crazy. Like, average, normal, everyday shit is so much more expensive than it was, even just, like literally more than it was, like, this same time last year. It's not like the economy is that much better or worse with the exemption of the tariffs and stuff, right? It's just the tariffs that are being levied against us, I think, for the most part, that are causing such punitive price increases. But that doesn't mean that it's to be ignored. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, here we are today. Like I said, today's the 15th of October. You hear about this whole thing, like the government's been shut down for like about a week or two now. And it reopens this week. But then they're like, we still can't figure out how to get shit working. My favorite thing about this whole government shutdown thing has been like Republicans and MAGA conservatives, especially bitch moaning and complaining about like, well, the Democrats have shut down the government. The Democrats are the reason why the government's not open. I'm like, you assholes literally control all three branches of government. You got the White House. You've got both sides of, you know, of Congress, you know, the Senate and the House. And you stack the judiciary in the Supreme Court. So what you're telling me then is even though you have the majority of the balance of power on your side, you are either incapable of the job of governance, you're too stupid to make it work even when you have the majority and all the power in your hands, or you're lying. And none of those things is a good thing. Because if the Democrats were that powerful, they would just take over again. You know what I mean? Like, if they were that powerful, they could stop you from getting anything accomplished. They could just find a way to vote Trump out. They could find a way to replace the Republican judges on the Supreme Court. They'd find a way to overbalance the majority that's currently existing in the House and the Senate. If they were that powerful, they would have been done that by now. So one of the three things has got to be true. Either you're bad at your job, right? You're complete morons, or you're lying. So you got to pick one of those and run with it. And that also turns around on the people who follow them and like, these are the people that you want. These people who are talking about how cool they are, how strong they are, how badass they are, but they have to send in the National Guard and actual federal, like, you know, U.S. military troops to protect under ICE agents. How bad are these guys at their job that they need the army to protect them? You get what I'm saying? Like, if they were so good at their job, then why do they need so much backup? They're not. Watch some of the videos that have been coming, especially out of Chicago, where people are like literally pulling detainees out of the arms of ICE agents. I'm putting that in quotes, so to speak, and just being like, no, you can't have them. Or how about when ICE tear gassed 27 Chicago police officers this week? So these incompetent boobs are the one who are supposed to protect you from the criminals and the drug dealers and the rapists that are coming across our borders. These morons are the guys you could put in charge? Good luck. Good luck. We'll all be speaking Spanish again very shortly, I hope. Because you have to at a certain point, your ideology and the reality have to mesh up at a certain point. Because living in a constant state of delusion affords you no prizes. You know what I mean? So you have to make a choice at some point to either go, I just believe the ideology and nothing else matters, or I'm looking at the reality, I'm going, oh shit, this is falling apart at the seams. Certain points got to meet up. Because if it doesn't, like, you're just living in delusion. And if that's the case, then, you know, there's a place called Narnia where you can live in peace and happiness. And you won't have to see any brown people anymore. Trust me, there's almost none in Narnia. There might be like two. And that's mainly because they're bears, so they're covered in fur. You know what I'm saying? Like, you gotta send your ass to a fairy tale world so you can feel safe. You're crying about Bad Bunny, who's Puerto Rican, which means he's American, by the way, performing at the halftime show. Wouldn't give a damn if it was somebody like Jennifer Lopez out there shaking ass, right? Nope, wouldn't care about that. Not a problem for you. All right, cool. Just wanted to be sure. Like, as long as it's entertainment that you can, you know, sexualize or profit off of somehow, then it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we can look at this all day long. We don't mind. You know, listen to, like, you know, foreigners, really? Elton John, Coldplay, they're not Americans. But Bad Bunny, that's a problem. Okay? Interesting. Interesting. Goodness. Yeah. All I see when I see this kind of stuff is just people trying to find a way to justify their hypocrisy. Like I said, this whole October 18th thing, they're like, oh, there's going to be a... This is another one of those, again, like those flat-out lie tactics that they pull. There's going to be a paid protest by George Soros, and we're waiting until that passes so we can get back to the work of governance and trying to pass laws and work out this thing with healthcare. What is it that makes these people lie like that? Are these the jobs, though? Like, paid protesting is the thing? These must be the jobs that Trump's bragging about creating. Is it all the people yelling and screaming at him and the people in his administration and Republican lawmakers being like, you know, basically ignoring the will of the people and treating us all like third-class citizens? There must be a future in that because there's so many people getting paid, apparently. I need to get on that. I mean, I'm pretty sure I could survive a tear gas attack for, you know, I don't know what kind of stacks they're handing out for these paid protests, but I mean, I'll try at least once. You know what I mean? I'll try anything at least once, twice if I like it. that kind of adage, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I don't know. Maybe tear gas is kind of like, you know, Tapatio light. You know? Like, it's like Tapatio you can rinse off with, you know, running water. Just pop a fire plug and run through it real quick after I get sprayed and I'll be all right. It is funny to watch the protesters dancing around in like these inflatable like unicorn and frog costumes. That has been a special delight. This is going to be one of the most interesting chapters of American history for kids in like, you know, 3 or 5 years to study this. But I love that Trump also lost the Nobel Peace Prize to someone who actually promoted peace. That's fucking great. And he's so mad because he keeps talking about how he stopped all these wars, which he didn't do. You know what I mean? Even like this whole thing with Gaza and Palestine and Israel, that ain't really all him. He just wants to claim credit for it. And people are so stupid and weak, they'll let him. And the thing that irritated me was because I heard about the whole decision, right? And some of you might be familiar with the way the Nobel Prize Committee had decided they were going to award the Nobel Peace Prize for 2025 to Maria Corina Machado, who is the Venezuelan opposition leader. And she was struggling against, I think it was President Maduro from Venezuela. You know, the guy was saying he would take, like, you know, take prisoners from the U.S. and put them in Venezuelan prisons and whatnot. And then there was this thing going around that that this lady Machado had dedicated the award to Trump. And we're like, there's no way. Come on. There's no way. Yep. She did. This capitulence to like white power structures is actually kind of annoying. I don't know what it is about Latinos who just think that like if they just, you know, if they do the pick me thing, and they just debase themselves so they can be closer to white power structures, somehow they're going to be perceived as one of the good ones. They still think you're a dirty beaner. Half of them don't even know where Venezuela is on a map. So they just wrap you in with Mexicans just because they don't want to be bothered trying to learn any geography. That's a true thing. I've actually seen people say that. They're like, I don't know where that is, but aren't they like Mexicans? I'm like, no, not even close. But yeah. So she dedicated this thing to Trump. This is a quote, all right? I'm not making this shit up. Let's see. We are on the recognition of the struggle of all Venezuelans is a boost to conclude our task, to conquer freedom. Who's conquering freedom? What the fuck does that even mean? We are on the threshold of victory, and today more than ever, we count on President Trump, the people of the United States, the peoples of Latin America, and the democratic nations of the world as our principal allies to achieve freedom and democracy. So basically everybody. Everybody help us achieve freedom and democracy. You could do that just in your own country by not being a sycophant, you know. But that's all right. Anyway. She said, I dedicate this prize to the suffering people of Venezuela and to President Trump for his decisive support of our cause. Wow. Wow. Just, you hate to see it because you just got to look at it and go, you couldn't even, you can't even look at, you couldn't even look this whole thing in the face, honestly, and say like, yeah, you don't deserve shit because you haven't been doing anything to actually support peace. All you've been doing is trying to drive a wedge between your own people and between America and other allies in the free world and beyond. Just anything you can do to create more division and more for me, 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 mine, mine, mine. And I was really excited about the idea of her getting the Nobel Peace Prize. Then I heard that story. I'm like, no way. There's no way she did. And I read, I'm like, oh, she did. Wow. Wow. Way to bend over and take it, Machado. Way to just poo. To just lean on over and ball wash. That is so disappointing and disgusting. And it, honestly, if I was the Nobel Prize committee, I'd be like, nah, we're going to take this shit back. You don't deserve this. If this is what you're going to do with it, there's a whole reason they said part of the thing was that they didn't give this award to Trump because him and his cabinet didn't reflect integrity. And like, why would you do this then? And then hand it back to him. You went through all this shit to oppose Maduro, and then you just ended up being just the same dude. You're just the same thing, just with a skirt on. That's so stupid. But again, like, this is what people do, though. They'll try to find any excuse to cover up their bullshit and to, you know, justify their clutching at, you know, like I said, white power structures or just any power structure that's going to acknowledge them, casting aside their own decency. And to a certain point, even like their own ethnicity, their own cultural values, so they can just get one fingernail closer to power or one fingernail closer to, like, you know, owning somebody, which is a very disturbing thing to have to think about. But it's the same thing as like people trying to slap Charlie Kirk on everything. Trump posthumously awarding Charlie Kirk, was it the Congressional Medal of Honor, I think it was? Or was it Medal of Freedom? God, I can't even stop because I meant to look at it. The Medal of Freedom, I think it was. Yeah, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. It's like, what? On his birthday. And then, of course, they got his widow up there dressed in all black. Like, ooh, Charlie. Seriously, that lady right there, she's a slick operator. Now she's got Turning Point USA watch. It won't be a year. It won't even be a year. She'll be added on some bullshit. Mark my words. This time next year, she'll either be running for some kind of political office or she'll be pushing Turning Point to push another campaign for somebody who is just like Kirk and probably end up being her next husband. I want you to mark that I said that right now. Yeah, he did this shit yesterday for Charlie Kirk's birthday. We're going to make this about Charlie. You know, Charlie Kirk, great guy, didn't know him, didn't come see my ballroom. But lots of people are saying he's one of the greatest patriots of our time. Big fan of me. Yes, big fan. Now they want to put him on, like, there's 40 different roads that are up for discussion here in the state of Florida alone that they want to name after Charlie Kirk. I wish I was lying, but I'm absolutely not. Like, they absolutely want to name, like, a bunch of these roads after Charlie Kirk. I'm going to put that in the description for the podcast so you guys can see it. So you'll be like, wow, this is what we're doing? Yeah. Yeah, this is what we're doing. We're just going to put Charlie Kirk on everything, because why not? Why not? Let's platform a racist and a misogynist. Let's just make sure that, like, we have him splattered all over everything. I mean, we got rid of all the statues, right? So now we're just going to put him on the streets. Now he's going to be in your Google Maps. Charlie Kirk Boulevard. I can't tell you. I would let, if I could jump 30 feet, I would jump across every intersection that I came across that had Charlie Kirk's name on it. because he didn't represent the best qualities of America. He didn't even represent the best qualities of white America. Let's just be honest. Like, he didn't really exemplify anything that I would look at as an American period, but also as a white man or a man period, that I'd be like, that guy is definitely who I want to be. And if that's the kind of person that you want to be, sincerely, please go fuck yourself. Like, that is a horrible, hateful human being to want to aspire to be. And like I said, he had every right to say all the evil shit that he said. I got every right to say what I'm saying right now. That was a reprehensible way to live your life. And at the end of the day, you know, we get what we reap what we sow, right? I try to be positive as much as possible. Try not to be coming down on people a lot, but I have to be quite honest. Like, I don't really care when it's somebody who's that openly hateful and willing to vilify not only himself, he was vilifying his own people. He thought so little of white women. That's what terrifies me the most. White women were so quick to jump on this guy. And it's like, he hated y'all too. He had nothing but disdain for you. You were beneath him. You were property. If we had rolled this back to 1825, he'd be one of those people who was arguing for the rule of thumb. Just so we're clear. And if you don't know the origins of the rule of thumb, take a minute to look it up and educate yourselves. You'll be surprised at some of the shit you find just on the internet. It's wild. Look past page one of your Google search, go to page two or three and take a look around. The good stuff's usually buried. Just like they bury a bunch of news stories and stuff like that. Like, they buried this Charlie Kirk thing when I went to go look it up. I had to go to like page three of like Google search to find it. And I had to specifically type in Charlie Kirk's roads named after Charlie Kirk or whatever. Like, you couldn't just be obtuse with your surf. You have to like drill down on this thing. Like, this stuff is getting buried. You have to be more mindful about how you're getting your news delivered to you, because it is being tucked away so you don't notice it. But yeah, like, I've heard even some friends of mine were talking about, like, oh, my aunt started talking about, oh, you know, Charlie Kirk's birthday is today. She's like, you bitch, you didn't even know who Charlie Kirk was until he died. You'd never heard about him. You never talked about him. You never shared a single post of his. You never watched a single video of his until the day after he was shot. You didn't even watch the shit the day he got shot. I'm like, yo, that just lets you know exactly who these people are. It's all about the racism. It's all about the bigotry. It's all about the misogyny. It's all about the anti-LGBTQIA sentiment. You know what I mean? Just as hateful and as close-minded and white as right as we want to be. And they're being more obvious and more brazen about it right now. And it's coming to a head because people are starting to notice and they're starting to actually fight back against it. So it is going to be a very interesting next couple of years in America. Again, like we had it when we had Trump for the first term, people didn't get their lessons. They didn't get their full of it then. They didn't learn their lessons then. So now we're going to get it again. And it's already so much worse. We got to do better. We got to do better. And you know what? Let's wrap this up. It's still going to be jacking up the volume on this whole story about like Xbox Game Pass. And again, you know, whatever we can do to screw other people over, right? As long as it's about me. Xbox's new price changes for the Xbox Game Pass Premium in particular is going to screw them over a lot. Like, people are already starting to walk away in droves. We went and grabbed 1 3-month card just so we could get through the holiday season. And then after that, it's a wrap for us. You know what I mean? Like, if we're ever going to use Game Pass again, we're going to get the basic ass pro, like the basic ass stuff, to give them the least amount of money possible. If we even do, we might just go completely offline and be like, you know what? If I can't play the games that I have on Game Pass, you know, I can't play any of the other stuff, I'll just play the stuff I have downloaded to my console, call it a wrap. Don't need to be bothered. You know what I mean? Why give you more money to give me less? Or to give me stuff I couldn't possibly care about. Like, I don't play Madden and FIFA and shit like that. What has EA got for me at all? What does it have for most consumers? We already talked about this before, but like Ubisoft Plus?
Okay.
Fortnite's crew? Yeah. There's people out there who like Fortnite. And this might be a good deal for them. But you missed the you missed a huge chunk of your player base with this and the 50% price increase. Like, you'd have to be doing so much more for games that aren't coming out right now, especially with all the layoffs and cancellations and stuff like that that Xbox has had over the last year and a half. You got to work harder to convince people that this is worthwhile. Oh, and there's a guy out there called Tom Christie. I'm going to see if I can link his video in the chat too, so you can see. Just so you know, Tom Christie's video is definitely not safe for work. He really lays into Xbox. And he has this series where he basically animates and voices over the characters of the cartoon He-Man from the 80s, but as gamers. And has Skeletor basically as the main villain for anything that goes wrong, or is almost like, in a weird way, like a very villainous kind of voice of reason. But it's great, it's brilliant. If you're an Xbox fan, or have been, or if you're just curious about what all the smoke is about Xbox, you watch this video, it'll lay it out pretty neatly for you. But Xbox isn't the only one, let's be honest. You know, this whole ROG Ally thing, like, I don't see the point in getting this little handheld Xbox, especially for the same price as a regular ass Xbox. I'd rather just have another one in my house than a handheld one. And it's the other thing too, you know, with people working from home a lot more, who the fuck is buying a handheld Xbox to sit in the house? Just play on your console, man. Play on your TV. This is it's a sucker move. And I know that it's designed to get rid of the Xbox branding and to turn it from, like, remember they said a few years back, they were turning Xbox from a gaming machine into a multimedia machine. So they're just basically pushing to make Xbox into like a modular console, which is something I'd been screaming about for years. Yeah, just like more of a modular console. So you could kind of focus on the type of gameplay experience you wanted. But now they're like, yeah, we just basically just turn it into a value PC. If you can't afford to get like a $2,000, $3,000 rig, you can get an Xbox for like $600. It'll do pretty much the same thing, just a little bit less powerful. Yeah, that's what we're going for. And I think we're going to fall for it. And you know what's funny? A lot of people actually are, which is actually funny and disappointing at the same time. But yeah, like I said, it wasn't just Xbox. It's also Twitch. Because yay, you know, Amazon, right? I was just looking at this earlier today. I'm going to wrap up with this one. But Twitch has this thing called drops, and the way drops work is, if you're watching a stream on Twitch, let's say you're watching me play a video game, right? Some of those video games will have these things called drops, which are little rewards that you get for watching somebody's content. It's a nice little way to reward the viewer with something, usually nothing stupidly, you know, over the top. It might be a little emote that they can use in the game. It might be a new skin, which is pretty cool. It might be credits, like in-game currency for that game. I was looking at it though, and I'm like, I noticed this one thing said, yeah, these drops are only available for subscribers. And I'm like, what? They're like, yeah, if you want this one, you have to subscribe to a channel that is currently playing this game. And then you have to watch for X amount of time. And I'm like, what? Wait, what? So you're monetizing drops now? In order to get people to get the free shit, you're making them pay for the free shit. Make it make sense, homie. Make it make sense. Here's the more egregious thing about it, though. It's one thing if you were going to just like, hey, if you're going to give away free stuff, that's always cool. People are going to be down for that. People would probably still subscribe to channels even. Let's just go ahead and roll with it like that. But you know what the people don't know? Stuff that doesn't actually count towards getting your drops. You have to do it their way or you get nothing. So, if you have Prime Gaming, which is basically a way for you to get one free subscription every month because you paid for Amazon Prime, that won't count towards the drops. Nope. Oh, and by the way, even as a free sub, it counts towards your sub count. Amazon still takes half. You think that the Prime subs, they let you have those? Nope. Amazon is still going to get their cut. An existing subscription being renewed doesn't count towards getting a drop either. A sub token, which is basically like a way for you to be like, hey, I earned this for doing X, Y, or Z thing, so I can use it to get a free sub without having to pay money dollars. That doesn't count. So you can see why the Amazon's not going to give you anything for that. right? You know what does count? New gift subscription purchases, a new 1 month recurring sub, or a 3 month recurring sub, or a 6 month recurring sub at any tier. That counts towards, you know, getting those drops. That's really nice for them, huh? Make sure you have to pay for a brand new sub just to get it. So if you wanted to watch somebody, and let's say you're watching myself play Marvel Rivals, which is one of the things that is locked behind a subscription. One of those perks is locked behind a subscription, one of the drops. But you were already subscribed to my channel. You're like, well, I'm watching him right now. Can I get the drop? Nope. You got to go and subscribe to a completely new channel and give them money too. Then you can get the free thing. Sounds neat, right? You know what counts towards a drop? Upgrading your sub tier, though. If you were subscribed at tier one, you wanted to move up to a tier two subscription to get the drop, then they'll let you get it. But if you're going to just upgrade, you know, for multi-months, like, hey, I'm going to stay at tier one, but I'm going to upgrade from like 1 month, you know, renewing subscription to like 3 months. Doesn't count. You can still give them the money. They're not going to not do that. But you don't get the free stuff. Prime to paid upgrades. So if you change from a Prime sub, like let's say you gave me your Prime sub last month, but then you pay for a sub this month, that doesn't count either. So that there's another way to cut you out from being able to get this stuff. Or if you switch from a gift sub, somebody was, you were watching my channel, somebody in the community gifted you a sub to my channel last month. You're watching this month to get the free thing, and you're like, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and throw like $5.99 at this guy, of which he'll only get like $2.50. Let me go ahead and do that for this guy. Doesn't count. Don't you just love Twitch? Don't you just love Amazon? How they managed to weasel their way into every aspect of our lives and still take and take and take and take and take and take? How much more do they have to have? How much more do we have to give them before we just go, enough is fucking enough? I'm looking at other places to go and put my content, and I sincerely think it might actually end up being me just live streaming from Patreon from now on. And if you wanted to subscribe to watch streams, I'll just stream for free over there, and then people can be like, I'm just going to donate. You could donate straight to Patreon instead. I'd rather do that and know that if I'm only making like $17 a month, that's legitimately what my content is valued at. People are like, I'm getting it for free, so I'm not going to donate shit to it. I'm like, all right, whatever, that's fine. Maybe every now and again, I'll do like a paid stream where it's just for me and the Patreon people. We'll do something fun like that. Maybe. But to have to watch Twitch eat half of you guys' money, knowing full well that all it's doing is just going to pay for Jeff Bezos to go up to space so he can jerk off on Mars, I don't feel like I could do this anymore. I have to find another way to make this kind of streamed content fun and make it worthwhile, make it profitable. Not just for me, but for you, because would the money be great? Absolutely. But I can feel the joy falling off of it when I'm looking at it and go like, I just know that Jeff is somewhere wiping his ass with these people's money, and it makes me feel gross. If you got any suggestions, feel free to hit me up over on Patreon at patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. Send me an email there for free. Like I said, it's free to follow for everyone. So leave me a comment over there. What do you think would be a better platform to work on? And some people have mentioned Kick. I'm not going to Kick because Kick is very right-wing Republican kind of shit, and I'm not supporting that at all. So no to all that. There's another one that's out there too that's like boosted by like gambling. I think it's Kick. One of the two. One supported by gambling, one supported and propped up by like, you know, right-wing MAGA conservatives, and I don't want anything to do with either of those. If you got any other suggestions, feel free to hit me up and let me know. But that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. Like I said, it's been rough. I hadn't really slept much, and I need to get some shut-eye before I'm trying to get a stream today. I don't know if I'm able to pull it off because I'm so fucking exhausted. And I got another damn HOA meeting. Grr, arg. It's supposed to be today. I'm not really thrilled about it, but we got to do the thing. So I need to at least be awake for that. Shit. Well, let me get out of here, guys. Thank you again for sharing the podcast. Thank you for coming back each week. Thank you for checking me out over at twitch.tv/linkib when I'm awake enough to actually do a stream. And thank you guys for all your support, you know, for sharing everything that you see. Checking out Aimbot, which is also great. I almost forgot to mention Aimbot. Aimbot Energy, just check the links in the description so you can get you some of that Aimbot Energy stuff. I might actually have to take one today just so I don't fall asleep during this damn meeting. But yeah, let me know also if you got any other comments, questions, whatever. Write me over on patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. And I'm Link Flores. You guys are awesome. And I'll see you guys a little further on down the road. Peace.